Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. It's me, Dennis, and today I have the pleasure of talking with Dr. Katrini Iqbal. Hi, Katrini.
Hi, Dennis. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You know, because medicine and healthcare is such a huge issue for our planet in general and for the United States in particular, when I met you, I so wanted to have this conversation. So I want to thank you for coming on. So the first thing I want to do is to get a little bit of your background. Tell me, what impelled you to get into medicine, and what were your first foray into the healthcare system once you became a physician?
Well, I think I probably started getting interested into the medical field because my mom is a registered nurse. My sister at the time was a medical student, and my dad actually suffered from a stroke, and I spent about a summer in Houston when he was doing his rehab. And I just saw a lot of the nurses and the physicians coming in, and it really made an impact on my life, and I knew that I could do something similar to that, and that's what sparked my interest. So I was doing my undergraduate degree at University of Texas in nutrition, and I started to do some pre-medical classes and study for the MCAT, and I was going to just give it a try, and I got into medical school and thankful for that, and went to school in Arizona, the Arizona College of Osteopathic Medicine, and I knew I always wanted to come back to Texas because my roots were here, so I ended up doing a residency program here in Austin, which is the, it's had actually a few names through the course of my stay there, but it's actually a UT Southwestern Family Medicine program in Austin, and I ended up doing family medicine just because I knew how important it was for the primary care doctor to coordinate care with all the specialists, because a lot of information can get lost if the patient, seeing different specialists, and the message, gets misconstrued sometimes. You know, the patient's telling their primary doctor that their cardiologist said this, and this is what they're supposed to do, when actually it was something else that they needed to do. So I think that it's really important for the primary care doctor to be an advocate for the patient and to help coordinate that care, and also to provide continuity of care and preventative care as well. So that's why I ended up in family medicine.
And when you found out, so you got into the practice, so there's a difference between having something in theory and actually having to do it in practice. And what was your experience, and where did you begin to say, wait a minute, there has to be a better way?
Yeah. I feel like I had a really good training experience at my residency program here in Austin. And they're very strong in family medicine, do preventative care, continuity care. And I ended up moonlighting as a third-year resident in an urgent care just to pay, have extra money to pay back loans. And I got the taste for doing urgent care, and I actually really enjoyed it for a while. I mean, it's a lot of procedures, acute care visits. You can get people well really quickly, so I really enjoyed that for a while, and that's kind of how I ended up doing urgent care right after residency. And so I was actually doing urgent care in Austin for about 3.5 years, and doing urgent care, it actually, even though I did enjoy it, it made me feel sad that I didn't have that continuity anymore. I was just seeing people for their sick visits and injury visits, and I wanted to see them for, their annual physicals and follow up on things. And so the more I was in urgent care, the more I realized how I really missed being there for patients and being their advocate and being their primary doctor. So I knew that urgent care wasn't going to be the end for me. So I was trying to figure out what I was going to do afterwards. So I was looking to see, if there's other practices I would join or, see what would be a good fit for me. And I just realized that anything in the insurance-based world is going to be just high volume, and you're just not going to have that long, continuity visit that I really wanted to have, because urgent care visits by nature usually can be anywhere from 5 to 10 minute visits and pretty quick. You can get people out, but for primary care needs, especially when you're meeting someone for the first time and they're telling you everything about their life, you really need to have ample time to you know, address all the issues. And so I was trying to figure out to what sort of practice I could go into after urgent care, and I just didn't think that another insurance-based practice would be able to provide that. And I really do have a passion for seeing my patients and making sure they're doing well. And I was doing some research and trying to figure out alternative type practices that are out there. And excuse me, the direct primary care model has actually been out for about 10 plus years. And I learned about it through one of my friends that I used to work with at a local urgent care. His name is Dr. Chris Larson. And he actually has his own direct primary care here in Austin as well. And I learned a lot from him, and he helped kind of guide me on what it is to kind of start up your own practice and what direct primary care really means. And with the direct primary care model, we have the ability to spend longer visits with our patients. And for me to answer my own phone and to call back patients with their labs personally. And I feel like this is really where primary care is headed. With this whole crazy insurance world that we're living in right now.
It has to. There is no way the way we're doing this is going to be sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see it. Yeah. I can't see the insurance model of having everything. It's extraordinary to watch because I'm in the VA. So I get a chance to be under one system. My wife is in private insurance under the Affordable Care Act because I'm an individual practitioner. So she gets, so as we're negotiating, as she's having to go, she's a researcher, and she does deep research into all the insurance plans and figuring, and it is a morass, and things are written to where we're not sure what could be covered, how it could be covered, where it is, exactly what you were saying about going from one person to another. I just cannot see that this, even the employer-based model, is going to end up to be unsustainable. And so, do I understand it correctly that the direct primary care is a movement in the United States? This is something that's happening, we're seeing spread out. Can you talk a little about that?
Sure, there's it's definitely been a movement going on. There's the directprimarycare.org, which has basically kind of an alliance with other physicians. And I know that there's a lot of legislature being passed. Coming up is that there's going to be some bills passed, hopefully, with the Senate about direct primary care, the monthly dues, being able to use your FSA and HSA money to pay for those dues. Because right now there's just a lot up in the air about, is direct primary care considered insurance? Can we use our FSA, HSA? And right now, the law is so vague, and so it's very difficult to navigate right now. Trying to coordinate direct primary care with your current health insurance provider and what the law is. But as this direct primary care model is growing, I think more and more providers, like physicians, are becoming more interested in it and trying to figure out how they can even just transfer their existing insurance-based practices over. And I think a lot of patients are excited about it because there's a lot of benefits that the patients are getting that they're not going to get in an insurance-based practice. The length of the visits. I always offer my patients an hour visit every time. The follow-up, you're always going to have the same doctor to you. And then just, ease of access to care. I mean, my patients email me, they text me. There's a good communication. And so it's never leaving these messages with some medical assistant that leaves a message for the nurse and then gets it to the physician. So I feel like
absolutely
it's bound to get there. So
I find it fascinating because one of the things when we first met, we were talking with you and your husband Nir, who were telling me about that a good analogy is like an automobile. And our bodies
Right.
are actually, and I've been thinking about that lately. And one of the comedy speeches that I do, I talk about how I am actually inside that I'm driving around in a 1948 Dennis, which is a classic. And you know how it is when you have an older car. You know, there are certain things, but you take care of the lubrication and you make sure that your tires are filled and you make sure your basic maintenance. There are certain times that you have to go to a specialized mechanic, but there are other times when you have someone that is just taking care of the basic maintenance to make sure that you're knowing. And so is that a model that works along with direct primary care?
Well, that's exactly the analogy we use, because we have no idea when we're going to, if we are ever going to be involved in a major catastrophic accident or need, you know, some life-saving surgery. None of us know
mm-hmm.
that. And so it's always a good idea to have that sort of catastrophic coverage for those, you know, possible events that can happen in our lives. Hopefully they don't
sure.
happen, but you just have to be ready. And for routine primary care needs, which are just very basic stuff, which is hypertension, diabetes, high cholesterol, thyroid conditions, preventative care, you know, your routine breast cancer screening, cervical screening, checking for any colon cancer screenings, you know, just routine stuff, making sure that you're up to date on your immunizations, and just someone to be there for you when your oil gets leaky, you know, you have a cold or you have, you know, a sprain. Just, you know, really bread and butter family medicine. It was never meant to be covered
mm-hmm.
under insurance. And so,
nope.
yeah, why would you take, you know, why would you make an auto claim on something that you have like a nail in your tire, right? So, you know, that's what your primary care doctor is there for. And so what we're trying to do is educate the population that direct primary care models fit really well, just in general, for anyone that's interested in having a better personalized relationship with their physician, but also really good for those high deductible catastrophic coverage plans, because you can lower your monthly premium by having a higher deductible plan, and then you can sign up for a flat rate membership that includes for your direct primary care needs, which is what we offer.
God, that's wonderful, and I feel the impetus here. Do you think that there would be enough? Like I think I told you, my niece is a colorectal surgeon, and her
right.
personality is very much, I want to be in that surgical suite, and I want to fix them, to take it off and then move on to the next patient. Your personality is very much that you like that long-term helping. And so do you think that we have enough people, like in your medical school, as you talk to other students, do you think that this is something we have to create in doctors to get them back into this model that we've lost it as a mindset? What's your intuition on that, Katrini?
Yeah, I think we have more than enough physicians currently in the U.S. that are compassionate and want to take care of patients. The reason, I mean, there's different personalities for sure, and they end up just choosing their specialties, which
sure.
end up, you know, we have a lot of, you know, very type A like surgeons that just want to get the job done and you know, minimize their time, and that's, you know, that's great because they do a great job fixing, you know, the surgical issue, and we need those surgeons. And then I really do feel through my training, through residency, just knowing a lot of other family doctors in the area, that family doctors are just a breed of their own. I remember an attending telling me when I was a medical student that family medicine, you're the specialist of none, but the jack of all trades. And I really
yes.
think that family medicine does bring in that personality, because you wouldn't go into primary care if you really didn't care about people and you didn't enjoy helping them and helping them
mm-hmm.
improve their lives. So I don't think we have a shortage whatsoever. I do think that we need to, you know, really encourage people to go into family medicine in general, because it definitely is not as attractive as some of the other subspecialties, just because of, you know, some of the other perks of having a procedure-based practice.
So I really think that we need to, you know, support family medicine and support internal medicine and pediatricians. Those are all the primary care here in the country. So.
So how is it, how, when you're in your practice, what are the challenges and the opportunities that you've had in building your practice? Can you talk a little bit about this on what you're learning and where some of the obstacles are that we can either legislatively or creatively just getting over our own blockages and our own mindsets? Can you talk about your practice and building it? And
Yeah, I think our biggest struggle is just trying to educate the people what our practice model is, because it's different. And my husband helps out quite a bit with this. He's on social media. He's really good at getting the word out about what direct primary care, what it really is. Because when we say we don't take insurance, people think, oh, I can only come to you if I don't have insurance, which is not true. Actually, more than half of our patient population right now has an insurance. So I think just kind of getting the word out and educating people that this is meant for everyone. It's meant for people that have no access to care and don't carry insurance. And it's meant for people that have insurance and just want a better relationship with their physician and want to be heard and have more time with their physician to address things. So I think that's going to be the biggest hurdle. And we don't get insurance referrals. So most people, they're trying to find a physician. They look on their insurance who's in network, and that's how most offices get their patients, and we don't get that at all. So we actually really have to get out in the community, and it's kind of like grassroots marketing. So we're out at community events. We're, you know, part of the Lake Travis Chamber of Commerce. We're trying to be more involved in the community just to educate people, and we're definitely not trying to take people away if they like their provider and they enjoy their primary doctor and they have a good situation. We're not trying to take anyone away from a good thing. We're just trying to open up, provide more opportunity for people. So once we've talked to people out in the community, people are very receptive. So we're really excited to continue to spread the word.
And so you're getting a chance to, and one of the things that I love about this, again, I'm going to go back to what my niece said, and when she was in medical school, they told her, in medical school, because of insurance, you have 7 minutes from the time you first see that patient to the time you must move on.
Yep.
How is that possible that you in this is a recognized medical school. This is big time medical school. says this and has this as the basic core. It's astounding. I mean, to learn about a patient, to learn about who I am and what my challenges are. It doesn't seem. So I know that there's that deep need is going to be for us to have this.
Yeah, I'm not surprised that she was told that in medical school. And it's unfortunately a reality of the healthcare system that we're in with most of us in insurance-based practices. And there is no way to provide comprehensive care in 7 minutes. You know, there is no way to sit down with someone to know their whole history and to address, you know, the handful of, you know, questions, concerns that they have in that 7-minute visit. And especially not when someone's having a really hard day and a patient just sits across from you and just needs someone to listen to them if they're having a hard time with whatever's going on in their lives. So, I had a little taste of that type of practice when I was just, you know, working urgent care, and I just realized that this is not going to work and I couldn't do primary care like this. I just had to figure out another way. So with the direct primary care, this model provides the ability to have that long visit with your patient. And I honestly have an hour booked for each of my patients. And you have plenty of time not only to review all of their history, address all their acute issues that they want to talk about, you can also get to know them a little socially. And it's really helpful to know someone in and out and know their personality and have something common to talk about so they feel comfortable bringing things up with you and that they're not a stranger when you talk to them.
It's so much, you know, at 67, I understand, and what I've done in my own personal research and my own spirituality and my own, I feel a real strong that there is a mind-body connection, and that our, that you can have a, that our internal, my internal perspective can impact and affect my health. So that when I'm heard, when I feel like I'm heard, and I feel like that we have a sense of hopefulness, that my recovery happens faster than it does when I'm depressed or down. I mean, there's a connection to that. Do you get a sense of that, in that you're when your clients and your patients are feel heard, that there is something connects, something help. Can you talk a little about that, Katrini?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I'm more than 100% sure there is a mind-body connection, and it's the power of, like, mind over matter. And it's really your attitude and the way that you approach a medical condition is how your outcome is going to end up being. So I completely agree. And we were taught in medical school that just sitting across from someone versus standing in a room makes, you know, them feel that you're actually listening more to them. And the power of touch, like just putting your hand on someone else's hand and just, you know, if they're, you know, sobbing or, you know, opening up to you, it makes them feel like a special connection that you're there for them. And you're listening. And sometimes a lot of my patients, that's all they need is they just wanted to vent and they just wanted to get it off their chest, or they just wanted to, you know, make sure everything was okay and they wanted to mention it to you. And you take the time, listen to it, and reassure them, and they feel so much better. So I definitely agree that there is that mind-body connection. And it really is the, you know, the willpower to get better. And, you know, there's a lot of patients that, you know, suffer from cancer, and I know of an oncologist telling his cancer patients that you can have a really horrible prognosis, but if you have a positive attitude and you know, you really know that you're going to improve and have a lot of support, then they end up doing better than someone that actually had a, you know, a better prognosis but a bad attitude about it, and the woe is me, I'm never going to get better, and just, you know, feel sorry for themselves. So, I mean, oncologists are definitely telling their patients that. So, and I see it. I see it firsthand with my patients, and it's their attitude, and it just really can change. It can be a game changer.
That, and I know that the research is backing it up, so we're getting a chance to move in that direction. So let me ask you a personal question, or another personal question. Congratulations on bringing a new baby onto the planet with your son.
Thank you.
And how has that changed your perspective?
Well, I had no idea.
How does that open you up as a doctor, having had this experience?
Yeah, so I had no idea that being a parent would be so challenging, you know. So I definitely have a lot more, you know, I just can appreciate all the parents that are out there and everything that they do for their kids. Because doing like well child visits, you know, you just go through like the checklist. Oh, are you hitting these milestones? And for me, it was just kind of routine doing these well child checks. And you know, the parents are excited that the kid's growing. I'm like, yeah, I mean, the kid's going to grow. But as being a new mother, I'm just so excited every time, you know, my own child hits those milestones. And every time he gains a pound, I'm just thrilled. And I'm one of those gushing parents now. And so it definitely makes me feel more connected to the parents, to my pediatric patients, because every little step is important. And so I really feel like being a mother myself now is making me appreciate all those little things that I feel like I may have taken for granted before when I wasn't a mother. And I didn't really realize how special and important all those little things were.
One of the things that I love about your practice, Katrini, is that it is an actual family practice. You have your husband who is helping to work. You have your mother who is an RN. Who is so this is, it's so neat because this is the way medical practice was for hundreds of thousands of years, that you had the shaman of the tribe and you had the healers and you had the work, but it was very family oriented. This is what it was put all the way up to, you know, as we settled, we had First Nation and all the people. This was much more the way we did family. There was family practice before we went into this model we've had in the past just only a few decades.
Yeah, well, I really consider myself lucky. I know not all family doctors have a nurse in the family and a husband that is very business savvy. And I'm just really lucky that, we all live close, to my mother, and that we all get along really well and we can work together really well. So I'm very lucky. And I really feel like having that family atmosphere, it makes the patients feel comfortable. They don't just feel like it's just someone that was hired for the day and they have no idea who the staff is. I mean, you're talking to a family. There's, we try to have no miscommunications, between my husband and I. I mean, when he's doing networking or marketing to help with the practice, and likewise with my mother. I mean, it's a very small group of individuals, and we like to have that warm feeling and include our patients as part of our family. And so that's what we're trying to portray. I just feel like a lot of these practices that are insurance-based, they're really getting absorbed, unfortunately, by large corporations. And unfortunately, it's because of cost. They can't afford to stay in business.
Nope.
Because they can't pay for the overhead. They can't pay for their staff and for their electronic medical record. And so they have to get absorbed just by need, just to stay open and to stay in practice. And so they get absorbed by these larger corporations, and they just end up seeing, it's just this, well-run machine. It just, insurance doesn't pay back as much, and so they have to see more volume, and it just becomes, the patients become a number instead of being an individual. And we're trying to get back to where family medicine used to be, where, you're the local doctor, everyone knows you. You know everything about your patients, and it's not like you're going in to see a stranger. And there are no strangers in our practice. Everyone's part of our family, and we welcome all of our patients to join that family.
Do you have a support system within the direct medical care of the entire? Do you talk with other doctors who are also doing this so that you get a chance to network, and what are your challenges and how can we overcome them? How does in the direct primary care movement?
Yeah, so like I mentioned before, Dr. Chris Larson has been my main contact with learning about direct primary care and continuing all the updates with what's going on. And I kind of feel like he's kind of our father figure with direct primary care, at least here in Austin. And
nice.
he's formed with some other physicians too, the Direct Primary Care Alliance. And this is just basically a handful of physicians here in the Austin area that have chosen to start their own direct primary care practices. And included in that is Dr. Garrett, Dr. Melissa Miller is just opening up coming soon in Cedar Park. And
nice.
We are all just really trying to, stay together strong. We're not competing with each other because we're all just trying to educate people about this new model. And so with this Direct Primary Care Alliance, hopefully, it'll become more of a presence and coordinate with, trying to offer direct primary care across at least Austin, trying to coordinate that with couple their direct primary care with a catastrophic coverage plan. And so to help people learn more about it and provide better care here in Austin.
This is, it's so cool to be able to see where the model is going, because I can only imagine, I don't know this for sure, I don't know this only anecdotally, that what percentage of the energy and time and focus goes into the insurance as far as an individual practice or a corporate practice, how many resources that they have to devote to that? It must be huge. It must be such a significant portion of that.
Yeah, you know, I can't really tell you the exact number about how much goes into it, but I know it's close to a third of what
Wow.
their overhead is, you know, goes into paying
Yep.
for things that go with insurance. So that's like the coder, the biller, the, you know, paying for, you know, the EMR that supplies all the claims to the insurance companies, and then just the sheer delay of reimbursement from insurance, which is, you know, typically can be up to 3 months that the providers can get paid for, you know, at a later date. And hopefully even at the rate that they charge for, but a lot of times insurance is denying these claims and paying a fraction of the bill, and which just drives that engine that the doctor has to see more and more patients to pay for his staff, to pay for this overhead. So it's just a perpetual cycle of, I have to see more patients to pay for my coder and biller, and then that coder and biller is charging us to, you know, send all my charts over to the insurance for claims, and it's just this vicious cycle. So with direct primary care, you just remove insurance altogether, and so not only saving the expense of having to hire all this, you know, ancillary staff and paying for overhead.
Sure.
But, I mean, you can lower your prices for your patients. And most people know that if anywhere you go and you offer to pay cash, you're going to get a discount. So by nature, direct primary care is all cash. And so we've already lowered our prices to provide affordable pricing for our patients.
And then you get back to what you were really there in the first place, which is taking care of your patients and taking care of the families and maintaining the health and well-being, which was the reason for it that we have gotten out of.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't know of any doctor that went to medical school to do paperwork and do coding and billing. I don't know any doctor that wanted to do that. So you either, you know, you wanted to operate or you wanted to see patients. And with doing this type of model, I don't have to worry about, you know, is my insurance going to pay for this lab if I didn't code it correctly? Because we do all cash labs, which are dirt cheap, and I don't have to worry about it not getting reimbursed because we're just playing a flat cash pay rate, and I don't have to worry about those kind of things.
You know, Katrini, the thing that I'm most vexed about in the medical field, the way we see it right now, is that it's so opaque. There's just no transparency as far as the patient being able to manage ourselves and to know what particular rates would be or what they are or how compare one to another, because there aren't very clear guidelines, and this opacity is such a challenge in it. Mm-hmm. So you're bringing transparency to it, and so that it's what you see is what you get, and here's what you're doing, and what a relief to us as patients. My intuition is that we're going to look back in 50 years, while I might not still be on the planet, I know that you and your children will be on the planet, and we're going to see direct primary care that it's just going to be a force. And not just yours, but the movement is going to be there. I'm so grateful to have met you. And anything else that you want to leave our listeners with today?
Well, I appreciate you inviting me onto the show, and I appreciate the opportunity just to spread the word about what direct primary care is, and I hope that other people can benefit from it. And I'm always open for if, you know, you have any other questions, or if any of your listeners would like to talk to us, we're always welcome to help explain anything else in further detail, because we are all about transparency, because we've unfortunately had some, you know, issues with insurance in the past ourselves as patients that we don't want to have that at all for our patients. We want to have, you know, open communication, transparent, and we, you know, are always open to talk to our patients about anything, and we just want to have a focus on medicine and health versus having to deal with a bill.
Well, this is what a hopeful way. This is, we're recording this on at the end of the year of 2015, and what a hopeful way to end this and to go forward, Katrini. I am just so glad that you're there and that you're one of an increasing group of physicians and practices that are helping to find a new solution, a better way of returning to what we know we can do. So thank you so much, and I look forward to getting a chance to talk with you again. This has been a conversation with Dr. Katrini Iqbal. I'm Dennis Tardon. Thank you so much. Thank you, Katrini.
Thank you. Thanks, Dennis. Have a happy new year.
You bet. Happy new year, and we'll see everyone soon.